This is Press Play on KCRW. I'm Madeline Brand. Time now for film reviews. This week, we'll feature some film festival favorites and a lot of alliteration that are now getting theatrical runs. Here now are Vincent Schilling and Amy Nicholson. Vincent is editor of nativeviewpoint.com. Hi.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Great to have you. And Amy hosts the podcast Unspooled, and she reviews films for the New York Times. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Madeline.
First up, Women Talking. This is about an agrarian religious community in which the women have been sexually assaulted and abused by the men in their community. They band together to decide what to do next.
We have been preyed upon like animals. Maybe we should respond like animals.
How would you feel if in your entire life it never mattered what you thought? When we've liberated ourselves, we will have to ask ourselves who we are.
Okay, Amy, this is directed by Sarah Polley, who was on the show yesterday, and the cast includes Rooney Mara, Claire Foy, and Frances McDormand. What did you think of this? And tell us briefly about the plot.
Yeah, this film is fantastic. One way to think about it is it's kind of a feminist counterpoint to 12 Angry Men, where it's a bunch of women from this cloistered, very austere religious community. You know, think like headscarves, no makeup, very dominated by the patriarchy in their village, where they've never asked anything from the men that they live with. But in the opening minutes of the film, the women realize that the men in their community have been drugging them and abusing them in their sleep and then lying to them and saying that it's not happening, it's all in their heads. And this is based on a true story. This actually happened in a Mennonite community in Bolivia in 2009. But the thrust of the film is that the women in the village are now faced with the fact that they're being abused by some of the men in their village and that the other men in their village are kind of protecting everybody. And what do they do now? The community of men demands that the women forgive their abusers, and it gives them 24 hours to do it, or they must leave. Now they're all in this barn together and they're having a conversation. Do we leave? Do we stay? Do we fight? If we fight, what are we fighting for? If we fight, what does fighting even look like? And it's just a really fascinating conversation of like all of these just opinions and mindsets, the people who are more willing to forgive, the people who are so furious and just want to leave. Every bit of it is just fascinating. It's one of the most engaging movies of the year.
Interesting. And it is based on the novel by Miriam Taves, who herself, she grew up in a Mennonite community in Canada. Vincent, do you think that Sarah Polley made the transition well from novel to screen?
I'm actually quite shocked it was as good as it was, because I'm going to be honest, looking at the trailer, I was not enthused to see it. You know, it just didn't seem like it resonated with me. And then I started watching it and it was just filled with these nuggets of incredible, like, words of, you know, we laugh as hard as we cry, you know, the absence of love doesn't result in violence, forgiveness can be confused as permission, all of these things that just were like so powerful. It sucker punched me. I had no idea it was going to be as powerful as it was. And I was really, really, really impressed by everything. And I think it's a true tribute to how much content is king. You know, you don't need all these bells and whistles that films of today seem to have. You know, it didn't have that. It was simple conversations of women really talking about things that really were just absolutely incredibly, incredibly well done.
All right, Women Talking in theaters in wide release. Next up, we have Missing. It's a sequel to the 2018 film Searching that starred John Cho as a father searching for his missing daughter.
Hi, this is Grace Allen. Please leave a message. Mom, where are you guys?
My mom never came home from her trip. I don't know where she is.
I'm calling about a guest you had.
Espere, no habla español.
Does anyone speak English?
I'm sorry.
Okay, so this does not star John Cho. Searching took place entirely on computer screens, and Missing is similar to this. Amy, what is the difference here with the sequel?
There is not much of a difference, actually, except that there's a few fake outs in the film. where suddenly it looks like you're watching an actual thriller that isn't taking place on computer screens. And you're like, whoa, that's real camera work. And oh my gosh, this is so like colorful and well shot. And then the image zooms out just a little bit and you realize you're watching this docuseries reenactment of a true crime. And you're actually watching a docuseries reenactment of the crime from Searching. So you're watching an actor play John Cho going through the things he did to rescue his daughter in the last movie. But that's really about it. And that's actually kind of the extent of how this can even be considered a sequel, except there is this kind of conversation in the film about young women who love true crime and documentaries on it and using the information that they've learned from watching these like stories about real murders to help now with this teen girl who is figuring out what happened to her mother. The teen girl here that we have is Storm Reid, and her mother is Nia Long. And, you know, we're just basically on Storm Reid's computer the whole time. Her mother leaves to go on a trip with her new boyfriend, this guy who's played by the actor Ken Long. Nobody seems to get along very well. The teen is sort of having issues with her mom, is kind of like, blah, 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 have a nice trip. And you see her Google on her computer how to throw a rager. But then, yes, the mom does not come home from Colombia. And so this daughter is now on the computer doing actually a very good job of out-Googling the cops and figuring out what happened to her mom.
I don't think that'd be hard, probably, in most cases.
I know. There's actually like a cop figure here. He's like an embassy worker. And he's like, whatever you're finding by hacking into this guy's password, you can't tell me because we cannot use it for prosecution. And she's like, great, here I go. And it's like, it's goofy. Like, I didn't love this film that much. You know, the story itself is fine, but there is a really lovely bit part in this film, played by the actor Joaquin de Almeida. He plays this guy who works for like a TaskRabbit sort of thing in Cartagena. She finds him by Googling TaskRabbit Cartagena and finding out what they actually use down there. And he's a guy who, you know, specializes more in like cleaning and electricity. But they build this relationship where she's like, he's very cheap. He only has 2.5 stars. I can afford this guy. I can't afford a better gig worker. Will you please just go to this hotel and ask some questions for me? And I loved that little subplot of it. This like building connections from around the world.
And I guess you have to wonder really how long lasting this movie can be if it's reliant on current day technology. Like in 2 minutes, we're going to have AI solve the crime.
Oh, I mean, I hope so. What if the AI lies to us? What if AI is a terrible detective? What if AI is in on it from the beginning?
Oh my gosh, I sense a sequel, a threequel. Okay, missing in theaters in wide release today. Next up, Alice Darling. This drama stars Anna Kendrick as a young woman in a psychologically abusive relationship.
What's going on?
So I think I'm going to have to leave early.
When did he become more important to you than us?
Alice, darling.
I lied to him. He has every right to be angry.
Lied about what?
About being here.
There's my girl.
Okay, Vincent, this film apparently is mostly set in a lakeside cottage where Kendrick's character and her two friends are gathered to celebrate a birthday without the boyfriend. So what happens?
I have to say that I think you just started off right without the boyfriend. You know, Anna Kendrick and, you know, Ganyet Yohorn, who's Mohawk, fellow Mohawk, as well as Wunmi Mosaku, who plays Sophie, Tess, and Alice, are doing a great job. And I think that I found myself watching this film going, you know, I wish the boyfriend wasn't even in it at all. And I'm actually glad that the filmmakers did decide to focus mostly on them. And it almost seemed like the boyfriend was an afterthought in some ways. I appreciated the level that Anna Kendrick took her character in terms of, you know, the anxiety she felt and the oppression that she had felt from her boyfriend. I thought that they did a good job of creating a relationship. And I really kind of didn't want them to explore outside of that. You know, they had to because that's the nature of the film. But I thought they did an excellent job, and I did enjoy the conversations between the women.
And Amy, what did you think of Anna Kendrick's performance?
I thought her performance was pretty good. I'm a big fan of Anna Kendrick in general. I think she's one of our really better actresses. But in this moment, it's tricky for her because this film itself is like so scrupulously honest about how the dynamics of a bad relationship play out and affect your relationship with your friends, which is a really true thing for people of any gender who have close friends who you think are going down a path that you can't follow and you don't know how to get them out of because they get touchy about it. And so she is playing this role, you know, in a way where she has to kind of toggle between like, I'm great, everything's fine. And she has to play that just at the right level, not too big, not too sitcom-y so that you can't relate to her. But then also when she, you know, kind of hyperventilates at the smallest thing, when she gets really scared that he might find out about a tiny thing she did and get mad, she plays these moments really big, sometimes a little bit too big. Her meltdowns get tiny, tiny bit too like exaggerated. But I agree with Vincent very much that like, I was really hoping that this was a film just about her and her friends, because their dynamic is so great. One of them is more of like a sloppy slacker type. And everything she says, Alice is like, well, you're just jealous. And the other one is the peacemaker, and the peacemaker's job just gets harder and harder. And you're watching the peacemaker be like, I don't want to do this anymore. And it felt so true. It felt very, very, very true. So then the boyfriend shows up and you're like, oh, now we have a problem to fix. I really just want to live with these relationships.
Right. So the abuse of the boyfriend is kind of like a B plot in a way.
It is treated like a B plot. Yeah. Yeah. You're almost surprised when it shows back up and you're like, oh, this is the story. I was really hoping it was the other one, because we don't hear that version of this. We have movies about bad relationships, but to have movies about how the bad relationship affects your relationship with everybody else, that's what really feels new here.
Moving on to our final film of the week, and this is When You Finish Saving the World, written and directed by Jesse Eisenberg in his feature directorial debut. It stars Julianne Moore as a mom and Finn Wolfhard as her kid. He's, of course, from Stranger Things. Here's a clip.
What the hell are you doing?
Installing a red beacon light so people know when I'm live streaming.
And by people, you
mean you.
Ziggy, you don't have to be interested in politics.
You think I'm stupid?
No, no, I didn't say that.
I brought you this hat, Kyle. It was my son's, but he no longer wears it.
I don't know what he wears anymore.
Okay, Amy, what's happening in this mother-son relationship?
What is happening is that this is a movie about a teen boy named Ziggy who's just very uncomfortable in his own city, because it's a movie that's trying to explore the idea of, have we made this modern world too uncomfortable for well-meaning young men who want to do the right thing, but are kind of seen as like the quote-unquote like privileged white kid moron. And so that is basically how the mother sees her own son. The mother is played by Julianne Moore, as you mentioned. She runs a center for women in abusive situations. And she really loved her son when he would like hang out and be kind of her like little liberal project showcase kid, where he would like play pro-union songs with her on like his little toy guitar. But now that he's 17 and he wants to play still gentle folk music, but play it on the internet for like strange girls, she's like, oh my god, he's such a fame guy, I don't respect him anymore, he's embarrassing. And so really you're seeing most of this movie through like the point of view of Ziggy himself, being like, I'm a pretty good kid, I don't do drugs, I'm okay wearing the color pink, but everybody in my town thinks that I'm this really big, privileged moron. And to make this argument, really what Jesse Eisenberg has to do is kind of create a film where this character is living in this just extreme liberal bubble. It's strange because it's a film that in some ways looks like it's trying to be just like, this is how the world is. I'm a normal indie movie. Everybody here is a normal person. But the more you listen to how everybody talks, it feels almost more like a George Orwell, like science fiction nightmare story. So it's strange because it's like not a pleasure to watch. You know, it's a film about do-gooderism, but a film that also has no empathy. And so it's like, I like the point that Eisenberg is trying to make. You know, he's not making this film to be like reactionary, to say the world is too woke. He's not making the film to be a troll. He's making the film to say, can we give each other a break? But the way he argues it just doesn't feel fair.
Vincent, what do you think?
To me, it felt like Jesse went and grabbed a 1985, you know, VCR camera, you know, and just used a videotape to make this film, because the aesthetic of it wasn't pleasing to me. I'm not to say it's bad. It's just something that wasn't clicking. And what really stuck out to me, and I know it was directed at maybe, you know, Ziggy's mom, played by Julianne Moore, and the girl he liked, but what really stuck out to me was a moment between him and his father, played by Jay Sanders. Is his father, you know, he's talking about, oh, this Malbec wine tastes terrible. Then he says, are you happy? And this is a question a father asks his son maybe once in your lifetime. And then it all kind of comes together, and I see where Jesse Eisenberg is going with this. I was like, I guess this is Jesse as a kid or something. You know, hey, look at me. I'm trying to do good things. So for me, it was kind of like, you know, the kid in the corner going, somebody please listen to me, is what it kindly ended up saying to me. And I was like, ah, I get it. And at the end of it, I was like, I sat through something I wasn't really liking and wasn't really sitting and resonating with me. And then suddenly, ah, I get it. I liked the film. It was very weird. I don't know if I've experienced that before in a film.
Interesting. All right. When You Finish Saving the World is in theaters beginning tomorrow. And that does it for this week. Vincent Schilling, editor of nativeviewpoint.com. Amy Nicholson hosts the podcast Unspooled and reviews for the New York Times. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate you having us.
Coming up, Evan Kleinman is here to talk chowder. Rhode Island clam chowder. That's next on Press Play.